May it please the court. I am Kent Masterson Brown. I'm a member of the bar of this court, but from the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And I, along with Frank Northam, represent the plaintiff appellants in this case, who are five individuals from all over the country who, without question, are eligible and entitled and or entitled to Social Security and Medicare Part A. They wish to keep their Social Security because they believe they earned it, but they do not want to become a beneficiary under Medicare. And for them, for three of them, who are federal employees, former federal employees, who had federal employee health benefit insurance programs, two of whom had health savings accounts, when they applied for their Social Security, they were given one form which required them to enroll not only in Social Security, but also in Medicare Part A. They all three objected to it. And they were told then that that is the only way it can happen, that unless you enroll in Medicare Part A, you don't get your Social Security. And that has been based upon three POMs, the procedural operations manual of the Social Security system, that simply state, all three of them, that health insurance entitlement cannot be avoided, and that if one were to withdraw your HI or health insurance entitlement, then you also lose your Social Security and you're required to repay everything back to the government. Now, that's what all three of those say, but each one of my plaintiffs and appellants believe then and believe now that that's not what the law says, that's not what the statutes say, nor is it what the regulations that have been properly promulgated by the Secretary of Health and Human Services and the Commissioner of Social Security state.
They're not asking for their Medicare payments back.
No, ma'am.
Right.
No, ma'am. Okay. That's clear. We do not. That's done. We just don't want to participate in Medicare. And what we're asking this court to do is really look at the plain meaning of Section 426A of Title 42 of the United States Code, which is the Medicare eligibility a section of the Social Security Act. And this is for eligibility under Part A of Medicare. And that statute reads simply that every individual who is one fully insured, every individual who has attained the age of 65 and 2A is entitled to Social Security benefits shall be entitled to hospital insurance benefits under Part A of Title 18, which is Medicare. That's all it says. Now, it doesn't say that you'll be dispossessed of your Social Security if you do not enroll in Medicare. It just simply says that if you reach 65 and you're entitled to Social Security, that you're entitled to Medicare Part A. Now, in terms of entitlement to Social Security, that's provided in Section 402A of Title 42. And it reads much the same. Every individual who's fully insured individual, who has attained the age of 62, has filed an application, shall be entitled.
That last one's the big difference, though.
That's what the judge below said.
Right. But that's certainly a difference. You said plain meaning was the key.
Sure.
And that's a difference. There's not a filed an application for the Medicare, there is for the Social Security, and therefore the theory is, I'm not saying this is right, but the theory is that you're automatically entitled, even without an application, to Medicare Part A.
You certainly can be, but by whether or not there's a provision in here that says
you are automatically entitled.
You are entitled automatically. Absolutely. I don't dispute that. My people were. But the question is, by saying shall be entitled, that indicates clearly to me that you can take it or you don't have to. It's entirely up to you. I really know of no entitlement program enacted by Congress that mandates that the person take the benefit offered. And here's a case where by these POMs, which are not properly promulgated regulations, no notice and comment, anything like that, the secretary and the commissioner have gone out and made it mandatory, subject to defeasance of your Social Security if you don't take Medicare.
Well, that's the theory in response to your argument, is it's not really mandatory because you can decline the Social Security. And
But you have
a choice. The word mandatory, it's a tough choice.
Well, it's a brutal choice. And yeah. Where in the statute is that provided? Is this not something the secretary and the commissioner have come along and just made up for whatever reason? Because it clearly is not in the statute when it's based upon simply shall be entitled. And shall be entitled has been, interpreted many times in the jurisprudence of these courts. We've got several examples cited in the brief from the Sixth Circuit, the Jewish Hospital case, the Ninth Circuit, the Fagner case, a state of coward against Nicholas Drilling Company out of the Supreme Court of the United States interpreted the term entitlement for the Longshore and Maritime Workers Compensation Act. And there it's simply, as all the other courts followed, the American Heritage Dictionary of the English Language and Black's Law Dictionary, to simply say it gives one a right to, it gives one something, it gives someone a qualification to get something. That's it. And that, to me, indicates, and I think the plain meaning indicates, that you don't have to take it.
But your real problem is not that you have to take Medicare benefits. Your real problem is how your other insurance treats the fact of your, let's call it, entitlement to Medicare.
Meaning what a secondary payer would be in this the circumstance? You know, Your Honor, the Secretary's made quite a deal out of the fact that, though, there's no difference. But there is a difference. When you're thrust into Medicare, Medicare becomes the adjudicator of everything you do. Now, to the extent Medicare determines it's not going to pay X but Y, then maybe the secondary payer comes in and picks up the difference. But all the adjudication, all the determinations as to the care you're getting, what type of care, how much is going to be paid, is determined by Medicare.
Don't the secondary payers make determinations in terms of how you're covered based on whether you could get Medicare benefits?
Well, really, they don't. I mean, because Medicare is the arbiter of first instance. It makes those decisions. Now, to the extent the secondary payer makes a decision subsequently, I mean, maybe some do. But Medicare is the determiner in first instance. And for purposes of these three federal employees who had really fine benefits, their benefits now are secondary. Medicare has assumed the entire thing.
Right, but that's because that's how that market has developed. In other words, the secondary insurer, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, suggests that even if you don't want the Medicare Part A, if you're entitled to the Medicare Part A, they're only going to be a secondary insurer.
If you have Medicare Part A, they're just a secondary insurer.
Right.
Or if you're entitled to Medicare Part A,
they're just a secondary insurer.
Right. So that your problem is really with how the secondary insurers do this. If there could be it's hard to imagine this, but there could be a market that would develop where secondary insurers said, if you're entitled to Medicare Part A, but you don't take it, will be a primary insurer. It's a little hard to imagine
There already is that. I mean, for purposes of federal employee health benefits, they were entitled to this for the rest of their lives without Medicare. They're entitled to that throughout their lives without Medicare. We don't need a secondary market. What we have is insurance that they could have had until the grave that they've lost.
Their rules make it such that when you're entitled to Medicare, they're only going to be secondary.
No.
Each
of these programs, for instance, Brian Hall, has the mail carrier's insurance plan. That mail carrier's insurance plan states that you could keep this to the grave as your insurance. Now, they do say, well, you know, Medicare is free, but you can keep this to the grave as your primary insurance. You don't have to go into Medicare. And, you know, we've got, excuse me, yeah, sorry.
Because I want to be straight. Even if that's the case, I see Medicare as, because of all the other regulations, as the date you turn 65, it is just this brooding omnipresence. And whether you're in it or not, it changes your mail carrier's insurance or in this respect. You may have it till you go to the grave, but other Medicare regulations are saying you only get what Medicare would pay because you are entitled to Medicare.
But,
is that not right?
But in certain instances under the Office of Personnel Management statutes, yes, they pay fundamentally what Medicare pays. However, like with any private insurance, I could use, if I had federal employee health benefits insurance at the age of 90, I could use my own money. I could get that benefit if I lived in Mexico. I could use that benefit for things that Medicare simply doesn't even contemplate. And that is a huge difference, where you can use your own money, have a health savings account. I mean, I have one myself for my family. I love them. I could have a, like two of my clients had health savings accounts. They can make determinations themselves about their providers, which Medicare prohibits. And that's, to me, a huge difference between Medicare and any other private insurance.
It would have helped if we had had the policies in the record, because I'm having a hard time seeing the injury, because, and I may be wrong about my understanding, but my understanding was whether you're in Medicare or not, if you are entitled to Medicare by virtue of being 65 and applying and receiving Social Security benefits, no matter what else you have, it is controlled by other regulations, by what Medicare either will pay or will not pay.
What we did provide, Judge, is the website in the brief for one to get to the insurance policy. The mail carriers is in there. So one can read it for, it's big, and but that seemed to be a cleaner way to present it, but it is in the record. And there's no question that one can use one's own money in private insurance however you wish, where you simply cannot under Medicare Part A, certainly can under Part B. I've been in this court before over that one, but in Medicare Part A, the provider has to sign an agreement that he will never charge that beneficiary for anything. And there's no private contracting provision like there is in 1395AB for Part B beneficiaries. So the ability to use your own funds to direct and control your health care as you see fit is, to us, a huge plus for purposes of private insurance that does not exist with respect to Medicare. So we ask this court that it take the plain definition to the term entitlement, the definition that we find in Estate of Coward against Nicholas Drilling and all the other cases that have simply defined entitlement. Also, Your Honor, in 1395B, one of the old preamble provisions of Medicare, it states that nothing in this subchapter shall be construed to preclude any individual from purchasing or otherwise securing the protection against the cost of any health care services. Now, how can you mandate Medicare Part A when you have a provision like that, that protects one from for whatever insurance they want to buy? That, to me, and in the words of Sierra Club against EPA, the words of in the statute written by Congress, is the clear meaning of the statute. That's what they meant. And that couldn't be any clearer to me. Further, in Section 402, this is the entitlement statute for Social Security, it provides multiple areas where Social Security could be taken from an individual. And in 402N, if the beneficiary is an alien residing out of the United States, 402T and Y, if he's a citizen of a foreign country, convicted of subversive activities, files a waiver, or is confined in jail or some penal institution, they can take Social Security away from you. But it doesn't say there that you can get it taken away if you simply don't want Medicare. And I would think if Congress, in enacting this, had meant what the Secretary says in those POMs, that Congress would have put that in the Social Security Act as a means by which you could be dispossessed of your Social Security. Yes, sir.
If the POMs were rescinded, or if we said they're in error in this respect, what reason is there to think that you could then get your FEHB carrier to treat you as a primary insured?
Because the policies state as much to these beneficiaries.
They don't say once you become entitled to Medicare?
No, there's nothing in that in the mail carrier's policy or the Aetna policy that we have cited that indicate any of that.
What about OPM's conditions for participants?
There's nothing in the statute that would indicate that either in the OPM statute. They could freely go back and pick up their insurance.
Have the insurers ever confirmed that?
Well, of course, this has never happened before. I can't say that we've gone to the insurer and said, would you? But we're relying on the fact that they could, and they would.
They would what?
They would reinsure my clients as first dollar insurance as they did before.
Why would they do that? Would they do that if you voluntarily give up payment from Medicare? It doesn't make much sense for the insurer to do that, does it?
Well, they would, and particularly for Brian Hall.
Now, how do you know they would?
Well, we believe they would. And for purposes of
that would mean they would incur additional costs at the same premium.
Well, the point is that for purposes of Brian Hall, he tried to get a restraining order and was denied. So this is a man who clearly went to far extremes to try to show that he didn't want Medicare. And the court denied the restraining order. Now, I have every reason to believe that the mail carrier's mail handler's insurance company would take him back as a primary
insurer.
Would
that be economically irrational of the insurance company?
Oh, I don't think it would be irrational at all. I mean, it's agreed to insure this man through the rest of his life. And it still is an insurer.
The premium, as I understand it, the premium that the carrier charges does not change when one becomes subject to Part A.
Right.
Their costs go down because they're now secondary.
Right.
So that premium was calculated on the assumption that anyone entitled to Social Security would be taking Part A and diminishing their costs. To take thousands of people back as primary at the same premium is what would be irrational.
I don't think it could be said, Judge Ginsburg, that the premium that they paid before was established with the idea that they would go into Part A of Medicare.
How could it have been established on any other assumption?
The point is that once they went into Part A of Medicare, there may have been an adjustment. But I don't think it was predicated on anything because the policy says you can keep this as your primary all the way through.
My assumption going in, and I think I'm accurate, is that there is no adjustment for what the employee pays. Mm-hmm. You still pay the full amount you paid before you went into Social Security or into Part A. So no adjustment.
Mm-hmm. I can't speak to that. I can't speak to that. All I can tell you is that the policy that we have seen from these were effective all the way through the rest of their lives, whether or not they went into Medicare.
That policy, the premium on that policy, is that not paid in part by the government employer?
It is in part, in part. So, in part by the, yes, by the, and part of their HSAs were paid by their insurer, which were taken back when they had to go into Medicare.
Okay. Further questions? No. Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Thank you, sir.
I do have one question.
Yes, ma'am.
I didn't even ask it, but if we wade through all of this, and it's a, how all these regulations tie together, how the regulations on the hospitals tie into this, in addition to insurers, is Obamacare, if it is upheld, going to just wipe the slate clean and?
No.
No. Okay.
No. When that thing came out, I tried to stumble through the 2,000 pages of it. I could find nothing that would impact this at all. Nothing has come up in this case. I could find nothing. And I'm, you know, we're full steam ahead as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
May it please the court, Samantha Heifetz for the Secretary of Health and Human Services and the Commissioner of the Social Security Administration. There's quite a bit, I think, that we agree with the plaintiffs about. We would, too, urge the court to look at the plain meaning of Section 426. And I think further, we don't discern a difference in how we approach the phrase shall be entitled. What we have here, it's undisputed that since its inception, Congress has required people to apply for retirement benefits. To get their Social Security benefits, they have to file an application per the language of 402 that opposing counsel read. Now, in 1965, Congress added Medicare Part A to the package of Social Security benefits that people over the age of 65 receive. And so 42 USC 426 has always provided that a person who's entitled to retirement benefits, who has established their Social Security entitlement and is 65 or older, is also entitled to Part A. Opposing counsel also agreed about that. Now, here, plaintiffs Hall, Krause, and Army have chosen to avail themselves of those retirement benefits, but are objecting to one part of that package. Now, turning to what that means, so that they're objecting to their entitlement to Medicare Part A that they agree is automatic, given the fact that they satisfy the statutory triggers for that automatic entitlement under 426. Now, turning to what it means to be entitled, I think we all agree that it means that they have a right to benefits. And one major error in the plaintiff's briefing is to suggest that they can't reject those benefits. They can, contrary to the assertions in their briefs, pay out of pocket if they wish to. They most certainly are not bound to accept the benefits. And this is explained at 42 CFR 489.21. And it reflects the fact that one of the requirements for providers in order to be able to submit a claim is that there has to be a written request by the beneficiary. So where an individual declines to sign that request for claims processing, the provider can charge the person individually. In any event, this is simply to say that they are wrong and their assertion is contrary to the longstanding position of the government that they can, in fact, reject these benefits. Now, two things came up in terms of what the implications of their Medicare entitlement was. And as the panel correctly observed, the fact that the FEHB provider is secondary once they attain the age of 65 are entitled, that's a function of other statutes, other regulations that look to the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, coordination of benefits model guidelines, et cetera, et cetera. And the relief that they seek in this case would not redress that complaint that they've presented here.
Well, now, wait a minute. The coordination of benefits requirement or protocols that are put out by the national commissioners assume that there are two insurers.
they assume an entitlement to Medicare. And as Judge Kavanaugh noted, and Medicare claims processing manuals have long observed that insurers may choose to decline to pay simply because someone could avail themselves of Medicare Part A.
Those protocols specifically say that this is the way to proceed with somebody who is entitled to Medicare Part A, not someone who is enrolled in
Medicare. Right. The model guidelines reflect entitlement. That is right. And the other issue that came up is the HSAs, the health savings accounts. Of course, that's a reflection of the tax code, the fact that individuals who are entitled, and again, they're the statute 26 U.S.C. 223 uses the term entitled. So these are things that turn on the fact that once you are entitled to Part A, you can no longer make additional new contributions to an HSA.
So if that, taking all of that into account, if the court were to say that the POMs are misinterpret the statute, or should have been without effect because they should have gone through notice and comment, it seems that nothing would change.
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, I'd be happy to address anything, but thanks very much for your time.
Okay, you've used your time and then some. Mr. Brown, we'll give you 1 minute, but only to respond to what you just heard.
Your Honor, it's got to be made clear here. If you're a Medicare beneficiary, you have to accept the benefit. You cannot go into a hospital and say, I don't think I want to use Medicare today. You can't do that. For one, before you even get in the hospital, admitted, you've got to sign an agreement that Medicare is your payer.
Well, I think where we left things when you sat down and the government got up is as to whether the interpretation of the POMs is your problem when there are these national commissioner standards, the tax code, all of which would remain unchanged if you were to prevail in your theory.
Your Honor, without respect to those, if I had an agreement with an insurance carrier to pay for my health care, the insurance carrier would pay for my health care.
The now, insurance carrier, in other words, would not follow the national commissioner's protocol on reimbursing somebody who is entitled to Part A.
Well, absolutely. There's because it says it's just entitled. What they're referring to is a person who's on Medicare Part A, and so much of that has grown up because of these POMs, because of what the government's been doing with respect to Medicare.
There are individuals, are there not, who are entitled to Part A, but did not take their Social, well, who would have been entitled to Part A, but didn't take their Social Security.
I'm sure there are.
And how do the carriers treat them?
Well, I don't know. I don't know for any of them, to be honest, but I'm sure there are many out there. But the point is that if they have insurance, if they have, it would be a contractual arrangement between he and the insurance carrier to pay the claim.
I thought the two plaintiffs who are no longer in the case are in that category now. They're
well,
old enough now.
The only reason they're in that category is that they can't sign the application because it would compel them to take Medicare.
Right. But, I mean, they are examples, are they not, of two people entitled. They're now 65.
Yes. And they have high deductible insurance policies. From all that I've been able to gather from them, they pay their own way, and the insurance carrier picks it up from there.
As treating them as primary or secondary?
Yeah, as primary insurers, as insureds.
And do the hospitals say we can only charge what Medicare charges or collect what Medicare collects because you are entitled to Medicare?
I can't say that the hospitals say that at all. Well, what I can say is that the insurance carriers may say that what we'll pay is what Medicare will pay.
Well, okay.
But for purposes of both of these gentlemen, they have very high deductibles, and they pay it mostly all themselves.
They're not entitled to Medicare because they didn't sign up for Social Security.
That's correct. But they're certainly eligible. So long as they sign up, they're entitled.
Yeah, I got that.
Yeah.
Okay. Any further questions? Thank you, Mike.
Thank you all very much.
Thanks. Thank you. Case is submitted.
Three of the judges seem to have left them here, so I'm guessing they probably stay here.
Yeah.